time. Oh, there we go. Welcome. Good evening, everybody. Hope you're all doing well. Welcome to Big Footy Tiger Cast for a Monday night. The draft's nearly upon us. It feels like it's so far away, Grok, doesn't it? And it probably is in some instances. It's over nearly a month away, but we've all got so much vested interest in what's about to transpire that we thought we'd roll out another show because there's a few more things to talk about. We obviously have spoken a little bit about our higher-end picks, but we thought let's have a chat about the ones that closer to the team picks. So first of all, though, how are you, mate? Welcome.
Yeah, going well, thanks. Yeah, good to be back. And yeah, looking forward to it. Just over 3 weeks now to go. So getting there.
I know. How was the night out at the concert? Sal's Pizza, I saw, got a visit, which was very good.
Yeah, Sal's Pizza. Stopped off at the Richmond Club Hotel for a few cold ones. And then, yeah, Steel Panther and John Five on Saturday night. And you're getting old when it takes you longer and longer to start recovering. I swear, I'm still feeling a little bit today. Just, yeah, it was a long day, lots of standing around. I think it was more standing. I went with a friend who got the VIP meet and greet. So he had to get there a couple of hours before the doors
opened.
And I had a floor ticket to get in front, sort of mosh pit area. And because we're like, we want to get as close to the front as possible, I was standing out the front waiting in the line for probably 2 hours, 2.5 hours before the gates opened. So, yeah, in that sunshine, it was, what, 26 degrees.
That's the worst. Actually, I actually remember, I think it was one of the Robbie Williams concerts. We got there super early because we're on the floor level as well. And yeah, same thing. It was a crazy hot day and I opted to wear jeans as well. So I was cooked by the time we got in there. Just shit house floor planning by me.
Yeah.
No, horrible. Oh, Nick's back on board. Welcome back, Nick. Hope you're doing well, mate. Hope the holiday was good. Hope it was good. Very well deserved as well. So yes, good call, Tiger Pop. We are over 1,000 YouTube subscribers, which is an amazing effort. So thank you to everybody who has subscribed to us on YouTube. As people would have seen on YouTube as well, we have started to put out some other videos as well. So we've kind of just done a video based on whether we're going to take Lawler, Foz, or Jagger Smith at pick one. And I did another video that went out about pick six with Smiley, Reed, and Langford. And then another one out today about why and how we think that maybe Armstrong can get to us at pick 10. A little bit of luck needs to happen for that to eventuate, it must be said. But yeah, so we thought we'll start to put out a bit more different content now. We're going to chop, these weekly shows up as well and put them out as individual bits and pieces too. So yeah, I thought we would start doing that. But before we get into the draft stuff, probably a couple of things to speak about at club level. Firstly, I suppose we want to give our thanks and appreciation to Noah Cumberland and Matty Coulthard, who haven't been offered contracts for 2025, which I know that we did sort of flag as being the most likely options quite a while ago. That was probably from you directly, Grok. But Cumberland's one of those really interesting ones that, and maybe it's a stupid fear to have, but I fear him being one of those players that gets somehow picked up somewhere else and then the penny drops and he starts playing good footy, because on raw ability, he seems to have it. And so did Coulthard to an extent, but it was just the consistency, I think, just not being able to string it together for long enough or at a high enough level.
Yeah, I think Coulthard was the one that I think the writing was definitely on the wall, given the injuries that we had this year and the fact that he only managed one or two games, spoke volumes when we were trialing the small forwards and everyone this year. So, yeah, that was definitely there. Cumberland's been thereabouts in terms of the D-list material over the last few years. Obviously, last year, I think he was lucky. This year, definitely, I think he showed, even at VFL level, that there were still some glaring deficiencies in his game, notably like attitude and work ethic.
Yeah.
Even some professionalism in regards to like discipline and everything on field. So, there's no surprises for me with Cumberland. And I know, RFC Center said it best. He didn't have a professional temperament. And you can say what you want. Obviously, Dimmer and Cumbo have had their issues. And I'm not sure how much that's played out over the last 18 months with Cumberland. But the rumors with him potentially going to West Coast, I mean, for them, it's a free hit. They've got nothing to lose with that. And hopefully the delisting is something that Cumbo takes on board and realizes that he's got to sort of pull his head out a little bit and just start doing all the team things.
And I will say, and I know this is completely not related to what he does on the field, but from a personal perspective, the times that I had come across him at club functions and stuff like that, he was really, really good with the kids, it must be said. I was actually super impressed with the way he carried himself and interacted with my young fellas when signing some football. So I'm always very thankful when players do that because it makes the kids' day. So hopefully he can make good use of a second chance if one's thrown his way, because he does have talent. There's no doubt about it. It's just unlocking that final piece of the puzzle. So hopefully he can get that done somehow. And I suppose on the flip side of the coin, congratulations to Camden McIntosh and Thompson Dow for getting extensions to the end of 2025, which again, I think we thought was fairly well odds on to happen. Camden McIntosh, I'm pretty wrapped for, and I know that he can sometimes be a polarizing footballer. He can have the odds turnover here and there, but I think when you step back and have a look at the work he does off the ball, with setting up the wings, protecting the wing for us, you know, and he might shank one kick and then he might go and win a 3-on-1 on the wing and lock the ball in for a ball up, and we've had a win there as well. So I think with Camden, you take the good with the bad, but he's been such a good clubman for us for such a long period of time that I'm really wrapped for him to get another contract. And Thompson Dow, I know and acknowledge I'm in the minority with this, but I'm really glad he's stuck around. I've been on record as saying that last year he was made to play a role that isn't purpose-built for him. He is not a number one or two midfielder, maybe even not a number three midfielder, but for various reasons he was forced to play that. And it didn't really showcase what he could probably do well at the highest level. So I'm keen to see how he goes as maybe a fourth and fifth stringer. And we're not, these kids who are about the draft, despite them maybe having more raw talent than him potentially, they're not going to play every game. So it's good to have someone there like Dow who can come in and do a role if needed.
Absolutely. I mean, we've lost Graham, we've lost Baker, we've lost Bolton, we've lost Rioli. They're the rotating midfielders that go in after the first choice. Oh, we've lost Dusty as well. So there's five players who rotate through the midfield that, you know, would be there if Taranto, Hopper and Prestia are injured. So obviously we didn't want to lose another one in Dow and then have, you know, Kane McAuliffe, who still needs to work on a tank, still developing that endurance, and then draftees. So yeah, definitely keeping Dow for me was a smart decision. And he's a known quantity at AFL level. You know exactly what you're going to get. And McIntosh, for me, it's not so much what he does on field now. I think this is just purely a cultural decision. Obviously, we know what Mac gives on the field, but losing two great clubmen in Baker and Graham, as I said last week, he's going to be the one that drives the culture. He's the heart and soul of the club. All the boys love him. He's the one that drives that team first attitude. So having young players come in and see someone like Camden around the club, I think is going to be a great asset to us.
Yeah, agree. And I think Kalina as well has been told he's going to be re-rookied, if I'm not mistaken, which I'm really happy about as well. And without saying too much, I think if our fitness staff didn't change, I'd be almost certain that he wouldn't have come back, because I do believe he was very disgruntled with how his back injury was managed for the last couple of years. Because when he has been on the field, I thought he showed some really, really good signs, because he's not someone who's not played football before. Like, he knows what he's doing. He's played, I think he even played at TAC Cup level before he headed over to do the basketball. So he knows what he's doing. And that was the big difference between him and a lot of other Category B rookies. So I'm really happy that he's got another chance. And I really hope that the club can manage the injury correctly and get him back out there playing, because he's still a bit of an unknown quantity, but it'd be good to see what he's got.
Absolutely. Yeah, he played up until under-16s, I believe, So he's definitely had that footballing background before he went, but again, it's one of those ones where you know, you play until you're 16, you move to a different sport, you miss that whole five years of development in a professional football environment, whether it be the talent league or the national championships, and then finally an AFL list. So he's sort of a little bit behind the eight ball there, but with our ruck stocks at the moment, I really don't mind the decision. I mean, you've got Obviously, Snack Pack going, who's still developing and is doing pretty well, pretty sturdy. It allows us not to rush Kalina.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly right. So I don't mind it. And yeah, fingers crossed he gets a crack at it because, yeah, like I said, the games I saw him play, he did look pretty good. All right, so the two topics at hand tonight. Now, we do have the discussion about, we'll do the North Melbourne pick two scenario first because there's been a lot of talk about us obtaining pick two. I feel like a lot of it's been largely driven maybe by North Melbourne because they're the ones that are keen to get into the first round of the draft twice. And I think that sometimes what Kangaroos fans are sometimes missing is that if they want to get back into the draft twice to pick up whoever they want to pick up, then they're going to have to kind of pay for it to make it happen. We're happy to facilitate as long as it's to our advantage. But we've put together some of the possible scenarios that have been floated around it. And these aren't necessarily our scenarios. These are just scenarios that have been floated around publicly that we thought we would speak about. And there may be other options as well. So I for a long time have been against the trading for pick two scenario, but when it comes down to this scenario one where Richmond would give up pick six and pick 11 and in return get pick two and a future first, which would then give us 1, 2, 10, 18, 20 and 23 plus the future first for next year, which could quite possibly end up being another top six pick. It's kind of hard to not look at that and go, okay, that's an interesting scenario for us to think about because we're spreading it out across 2 years. Potentially, the early picks for next year could be used in a play for Cadman as well, or we just take him to the draft ourselves. But to get, at worst case, you've got two top six picks for next year already locked and loaded, which I don't think is anything to sniff at. So I'm not totally against it as long as the future first is included.
Yeah, I'm the same. I'm still one of these people that want us to keep the picks we have. But if we were to trade for pick two, I think this scenario here, 6 and 11 for two and North's future first, is probably the best outcome. I think giving up six, we move four picks up in the draft. And giving up pick 11 for North's, essentially pick 11 for North's future first, that could easily be a 10 pick upgrade.
And I think it's worth saying as well that I dare say that if you're Richmond, the starting point would be 6 and 18, right? Or 6 and 20. I don't think North Melbourne would accept that, and probably rightfully so. As much as we want to have a good win, of course, in trades, I think we have to be somewhat realistic. I don't think they'll take it. But then the question from a Richmond perspective becomes, are the players we're going to get at 1 and 2, let's assume it's Lawler and Finno Sullivan, because that's kind of what's been floated, is the difference between them two so much greater than what's going to be available at six, whether it be Jagger Smith, whether it be Langford or Murphy Reid, someone like that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you can't really look at that right now because, as you said, the future first for North could be used next year. I mean, next year you never know what's going to happen. Some players are going to absolutely, you know, jump the boards like obviously Alex Taru has this year, jumped from, you know, outside the top 30 into a top 10, top 5 pick. So definitely, I think we're definitely banking on North obviously finishing similar next year. I really can't see them developing massively outside of a top 5 or top 6 pick in the draft. So, yeah, we'll definitely try and keep 11 if we can, but it'll definitely be one of 10 or 11 that we give back because North won't do 18 and 6.
Now, Andy, just to address this, I think you're actually a little bit off the mark here. It's not fantasy. North Melbourne want to get into this draft twice. They don't want to use the number 2 pick on Taru where they can get him at 6 and or 11 because no one else is possibly going to take him. So it's not that fanciful. It's a simple equation. If North are desperate enough and they want to get into two picks inside the draft, then they're going to have to pay overs to make it happen. It's pretty simple. So I don't know why you're being a little bit toey about it, but it's North Melbourne who are wanting to get into the draft. So like with trades with contracted players, if you want that asset, you've got to pay up for it. So they're going to have to pay up something nice for us to accept. Otherwise, we'll happily walk to the draft with the picks that we've got. Yeah. Now, there's a couple other scenarios we've got here as well. So scenario two, eliminating the pick six factor. So Richmond would give up pick 10 and pick 11, which I believe equates, I know points is a bit of a weird thing, but point, I think it equates to about pick two or three points wise. North Melbourne give up pick two plus a future second. And that would give us picks 1, 2, 6, 18, 20, 23. So we hold on to that pick 6. We obviously gain pick 2. So you've got three picks within the side inside the first 6, which opens up a lot more opportunities, but then you lose that back-to-back pick of 10 and 11. I'm not sure whether North would do this anyway, unless they firmly believe they can get their player at that spot. But yeah, it was just another interesting scenario to throw up for this one.
I personally think that we won't give up 10 and 11 in a package deal. I think we'll probably give up 6, only for the simple fact from what I'm hearing, there's a chance that both Armstrong and Smiley could be there at pick 10 and 11. With the way that the draft's working out, there have been some players who have risen in clubs' ranks after the combine. So there's a very small chance that both players are there, and I doubt we'd give up both 10 and 11 if that's the case.
Fair enough. And that's what we throw in, all different types of scenarios. Scenario three, which I think is the one that people would maybe favour more if they had to, is Richmond give up pick 6 and pick 18. I dare say we would probably start that conversation at pick 20 if we were able to. And North Melbourne give up pick 2 plus a future third. So the new picks would be 1, 2, 10, 11, 20, 23. So we still get 1 and 2, and then we go back-to-back again at 10 and 11. That I think that one probably seems the most enticing. If it meant giving up 6 but still keeping 10 and 11, that would be the most enticing in my eyes. But again, I don't know if it's enticing enough for North.
Yeah, that's the thing. I think this will be the one that I reckon, if we do trade for pick 2, will be the trade that gets it done. Obviously, North will probably want 10 and 11. And we want to do the one where we get 2 first. So I think this is probably the in-between where both clubs walk away and say, okay, well, that's sort of fair enough.
Yeah, and I think to Shane's point, realistically, if we're talking about getting pick 2, if we're being serious, pick 6 is going to have to be involved in some way. I can't see North wanting to slide down any further than that if they're giving up the number 2 pick and potentially a future first rounder as well. So I think scenario 3 would be ideal. But like I said, I'm just not sure whether North would agree to it. However, if they're desperate enough and we're the only one coming to them with an offer, maybe they've got no choice and maybe that's what they're banking on. I did put up a fourth scenario, though. Fourth scenario is that Lowell North will take the picks that we've got, thanks, and Blair will just go and do his thing as per the numbers that, or the names that he and Toshay had been working on all year. So that means we would take our 1, 6, 10, 11, 18, 20, and 23. Now, to be fair, we're probably not going to use all 8 picks. I do think that we are going to use 6 and swap 2 at some point for future picks for next year, which is most likely going to be 23 and 24. But yeah, it's just an interesting set of scenarios because the talk's starting to heat up. Jaden Stevenson obviously got, he retired today, so that frees up the list spot that, you know, helps kind of maybe keep this flowing and accommodating. But yeah, St Kilda could come in over the top with an offer. I don't know. What do you reckon the chances are of it getting done?
I still reckon it gets done. If we're dead set on getting Lawler and O'Sullivan as the combo package, we'll find a way to get it done. But we also need to look at our later picks as well, because they can be untraded for later picks, slip back in the draft, which we can use to upgrade, you know, a couple of rookies off the list. I believe Bauer is still a rookie. Don't be surprised if picks like 23 and 24 end up being untraded on the night for a pick in the 40s or 50s plus a future second.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's what we'll end up happening with with those picks. So, yeah, there's a few different scenarios. And to Rocco's point, and this is probably the most important point to remember, it's a good problem to have that there's a team who wants to do something in the draft, and we kind of, in some ways, hold a lot of the cards to facilitate that for them. So if it's going to happen, I dare say it's going to be on our terms. Same if whether it was St Kilda that were doing it as well, whoever it might be. Yeah, North are going to have to be prepared to pay a little bit to have it happen. But I think it's definitely a watch this space for pick two. It's going to be fascinating to see if we land it. And like I said, the biggest question for me is the players we get at one and two going to be hugely different or hugely better than who's going to be at six? And that's the decision that Blair has to make.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, now, I know we haven't really got this part planned, but rolling back to our first pick, has anyone here changed their mind on who they think is going to be taken at number one? So there's still a lot of talk about Lawler being the number one pick. A lot of people also reckon O'Sullivan should be the number one pick as well. And there's still a lot of love for Jagger Smith too, it must be said. What I found interesting is on the AFL Draft Central, their power rankings, Lawler's actually quite low on that list. And it's still Jagger up top. And I really respect and rate those guys and what they do. But I'm keen to hear if anyone's changed their mind. Who's team Lawler? Who's team Foz? Who's team Jagger? Let us know what you're thinking in the comments.
Yeah, just on those rankings, it goes in terms of consistency and output as well. That's why Jagger and Ashcroft are one and two.
Yeah, which I think is still important to factor in when talking about drafting a player too. And you know, the talk about the hamstring injury does still keep coming up with Lawler. And I know players get hammy injuries all the time. I suppose we seem to get more than most. But has your mind changed at all, or is it still Lawler for you?
I'm still hearing that Lawler's locked at one.
You're still hearing that. And, yeah, is there a world where it changes to Jagger or O'Sullivan? If we're going to get pick two, do you think it's for Jagger Smith or do you think it's for O'Sullivan?
It'd be for O'Sullivan. From what I'm hearing, Jagger, we've said that if he's there at six, which is highly unlikely, and we don't trade for Finn, that we'll take him at six. But outside of one and two, it's Lawler and O'Sullivan.
It's and I think you'd be happy with that. And someone actually messaged me today. I won't drop a minute, but they were speaking to a player who is in this draft, and even that player said that he would say that Lawler was, it would take him and O'Sullivan, but yeah, before Jagger as well. So kind of all checks out, but yeah, it's going to be fascinating. The Sekel Twomey has Foz ahead of Lawler. It's just going to be horses for courses, and it's such a big decision to be a fly on the wall in that that room with the boards and the magnets that we've got at the club would be fascinating.
Yeah, with Cal Toomey, just wait for the phantom draft he does the week before. It's usually in the last sort of week or two before the draft. That's when he gets the really good mail, and he's usually pretty spot on with the first five or six picks.
Yeah, yep, he's usually pretty good. A few people have started to mention Draper as well as being a player that should be seriously considered as well for one of these first two picks. But there's also been a few people who don't think he's worth that high of a selection. But have you got any thoughts on Draper?
He'd be third on my list in that Lawler, Foss and Draper group. They'd be the three players that I'd be happy to take at one and two, any combo of those players. Draper is a jet. Like, he's got pretty much all the tools that you'd want in a midfielder. He's got amazing speed. He's pretty good around the contest. Can hit the scoreboard. I think we're just the go-home factor. I think we're a little bit spooked overtaking him at potentially pick one. Obviously, we saw what happened the last time a South Australian got taken at pick one at a struggling, developing, rebuilding club. I don't think we'll pull the trigger.
Now, the other player I want to talk about before we look at some highlights, I didn't bring this guy's highlights up because it's posted on another video, but Harry Armstrong is the other name of serious interest, not just for us, but for a lot of clubs. Some people are flagging if we want him, we should try and take him at six. I've just got this weird feeling that he could possibly slip to 10. And it's a little bit of a now hear me out, but I know a lot of people have flagged Melbourne as having big interest in him. But I was going through their list, and they've got almost 6 to 7 key position forwards. So they've got Van Rooyen, obviously, up forward. That Jefferson's coming through the VFL. Petty, a few other guys. Obviously, Fritsch is a forward too. So a lot of their supporters have been saying they don't think they need another forward. They're sort of hell-bent on wanting to get or wanting their club to get two midfielders to help replace Petrarca and Oliver, as it's kind of seemingly like they may not be there for much longer, which makes sense. It makes complete sense. So I'm kind of inclined to back the D supporters in a little bit here and hope that they don't take him at 5 or 9. But the other contender would be St Kilda, obviously. So they've got a lot less key position forwards on their list. They've got Caminiti, King, and there was one other who's Sharman? Cooper Sharman, yep, I think it is. So they're a bit more light on. But I went and asked a heap of St Kilda supporters on their board, and none of them were really interested in him either. And they were probably more interested in Bo Allen, I think, and more midfielders too. So they believe they need more midfield depth. And I know there's a lot of people who don't think that he'll get to 10, but I still believe there is definitely a chance that he could slide there based on the list profiles of the clubs and what they've already got and what they maybe need more than afford.
Absolutely. Melbourne at this stage, their preferences right now are one of Smiley or Langford. They're the two players that they're really zeroing in on for that pick. And St Kilda are in for Smiley, Reed, and Xavier Lindsay. They really like Xavier Lindsay. So, yeah, there's every chance that Armstrong is there at 10.
Yeah, and like Jay Tiger, I respect your thought that they need a forward, but I don't reckon they do. They've got plenty of forwards, and their supporters seem to think that as well. So, look, it'll take a bit of luck. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying it's a certainty for him to slip to 10, but I just think it's a bit of a watch this space. I think there's a little bit that could play out there. And I think a little bit of it comes down to what happens with pick 2. And if North Melbourne do hold it, if they pick Taru at 2, then it kind of pushes everyone back another spot. It makes things a bit more interesting.
Yeah. The Ds could also be looking at Trainer as well. They've been linked to Luke Trainer.
Yeah, so it's going to be fascinating to see how that one pans out. It's not. I wouldn't fully discount it. I can understand why people don't think it's likely to happen, but I also think it's a sneaky chance just given some of the list profiles. But we'll see how it pans out. So the other thing we've done as well for tonight is we wanted to take a bit more of a closer look at our picks 10 and 11 on the assumption we hold them, of course. Obviously, a lot of stuff can change between now and then on draft night. We could trade them out or whatever might happen, but there's obviously going to be quite a few players that slip down to 10 and 11. And there's what have we got? I've got four highlights packages here that we thought we'd roll through, have a look at, get everyone's thoughts on, as these could be some possible options that we might have at pick 10 and 11. The first one we'll look at is Luke Trainer, who I know you just mentioned, Grok. I'll mute that. So we'll talk while the highlights run. So he's number 26 for those wanting to keep an eye out for him. So obviously Luke Trainer is one of the most highly touted tall prospects in the Coates High comp. So as a defender, really good intercept marking, has had some concussion issues, which is kind of what the talk is about, clubs maybe being slightly deterred. But if we have pick 10 and 11 still intact, Grok, do you take the punts on getting someone like Luke Trainer?
I think if we do... I think if clubs are willing to pull the trigger, I think we'd be one of them, given that we've got so many in the back line to cover for him if it doesn't work out. I mean, we've got Tyler Young, Josh Gibkiss, Tommy Brown. So we've got players that, you know, could cover for him if it doesn't work out. But again, the concussions are the big issue, especially now with the whole CTE and the lawsuit against, the group lawsuit against the AFL right now with the class action for concussions and head knocks and everything. So I think Trainer is one we'd like to have, but is not a necessary need for us. It'd be more if we value him as the best player available rather than a needs-based pick, where a lot of others will be, you know, best available and needs-based. So yeah, I can't really see Trainer being selected by us, and especially at 10 or 11, I do think he'd be there later with those concerns unless Melbourne get in.
And if there weren't the concussion issues prevalent, how high would he go? Because there's been a lot of talk that he would have been touted potentially even top five.
Yeah. So North Melbourne were really linked to Trainer all year up until July when it came out that he had concussion issues, and they steered clear. There's definitely an element that clubs are scared off by it, especially with first round draft picks. You generally want them to be safe. So that's the one positive with the number of first rounders that we have. We can take some of the safer picks, and we can afford to take a risk with a couple and take the punt because we have so many. If we can have a 75% hit rate from eight, if we get six and two we take a risk on that could potentially be amazing, you'd sort of take that.
Tell you what, he does look good. I know highlights are highlights for a reason, but does show some good intercept traits. Obviously went forward and kicked a goal as well. So I think one of the quotes I read is he does consider himself a bit of a swingman going back and forward, which is interesting.
Yep. The one knock on him besides the concussion is his one-on-one defending. He's been likened to a bit of a Tom Stewart in that he much prefers to play as an interceptor and can struggle getting caught out one-on-one. That's okay. The only knock on him.
Bit of a mixed bag in chat about Hit Trainer as well, for much the same reasons we were speaking about with the concussion and stuff like that. But I think we're in a pretty unique spot with the amount of picks we have. It's almost not a free hit because you can still get it really wrong. But if anyone's going to be more enticed to do it, I think it's a team like us who have got those extra picks up their sleeve. If you only had one or two, you're not going to run the risk, I don't think. And that's where he's probably going to slide. But yeah, it can definitely be a viable option just because of the amount of picks we carry. We'll move on to Toby Travaglio, who I think is one of your main men. I know EJ's very keen on him as well to be picked up with 10 or 11. I'll roll the footage. Make sure as well, guys, get behind Footy Stuff, the YouTube page. They do all of these videos. They're very, very good. So number 13 is he looking out for here in this clip. But give us your thoughts on Toby. What's the big draw card to getting him in? A few people have sort of claimed he could be a ready-made Dan Rioli replacement, which is a massive call, but is that kind of where your head is as well?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, we've already lost one rebounding defender. We've got another who's aging and probably won't be there in a couple of years' time in Jaden Short. So we desperately need to bring in some right now. I mean, we've got a couple on the list already, but they don't have some of the elite traits that Travaglia has. Like, he's very quick. I've got a profile up for him. And his strengths are listed here as his competitiveness, defensive pressure. He harasses. He's not just an attacking, rebounding half back. He actually applies defensive pressure. He's got a really good tank. And for someone of his size, he's also pretty solid in the intercept marking. He's pretty good overhead. He's got great speed and his work rate. He runs pretty hard a lot of the time. You won't really see him doing a Jaden Short where after the ball's gone, he stops and just waits. He'll continue to push up the field if he can influence around stoppages as well. So he's definitely one that I would rate. His kicking can be a bit iffy, especially over longer distances. He can misjudge the power needed to hit targets. But that'll just come with more decision making, which should hopefully improve as we see there. That kick was just a bit of a nothing kick there, but yeah, definitely he'll make us a lot better.
What's the likelihood that another club might jump in before us? Could the D's or St Kilda have him up high on their board as a serious enough contender to get him before he hits 10 or 11?
Yeah, D's. D's are a chance, Saints are a chance. Cole can really rate him as well. So if we do one and two, there could even be a world where Cole can take him in the top five. The very small chance, very, very small chance. But yeah, if that happens, I wouldn't be overly surprised. But yeah, definitely, I think St Kilda is probably the one that would be more likely to take him.
Could you imagine if they took him, yeah, with their first pick, if we had one and two and they jagged him? Jesus. So there's been a lot of love for him in chat as well. So hopefully, I know, like I said, I know that yourself and EJ have been flagging this guy for quite some time. So hopefully he does drop down. Look at that run off the back of the square. That is Dan Rioli-esque. And like I said, I know it's a highlights package for a reason, but I tend to agree with you that if he does long bomb a little bit, I mean, one, it's probably not unusual for our team to do that anyway, so it probably actually fits right in. But that just comes with experience and knowing where your teammates are. Because you've got to remember, with these games here in the championships, they play a lot of the year against each other, so they don't really have a lot of time to get that proper gelling. I know they play a few more games now, it's a proper carnival, but yeah, I can kind of excuse that a little bit.
Yeah, and you also need to factor in, especially with players who can go through the midfield, that tagging is highly frowned upon during the national championships.
Absolutely, yeah. Even just in general coach hire, yeah. Tagging's frowned upon, as is flooding and dropping a spare number behind the ball. You'll never, ever see it. That it's always one-on-one and made the best team win, essentially. So, okay. So, yeah, an interesting decision ahead there at pick 10. Next up, who could also be in and amongst this topic of conversation is Xavier Lindsay, who I know is probably coming to calculations a little bit in recent times. So wearing the number 3 in this clip, what are your thoughts on Xavier Lindsay? How do you see him potentially being available at picks 10 or 11?
My main concern with that is St. Kilda. As I mentioned earlier, the Saints really have Xavier Lindsay really high on their draft board. They're in, to the point where he's probably a lock at pick 8 or 9 for them. Or 7 or 8, whatever picks they have. One of those. He's probably the most well-rounded player in the draft. He's very good at a lot of things, but doesn't stand out in any of them. Like, he's just a very... If I could say that there'd be one player who would be a 200 gamer in the draft class, it would probably be Xavier Lindsay.
Really? Like, he's okay.
Clubs see him as probably the safest pick outside of Jagger Smith. But, yeah, Lindsay for me is definitely one of those players that would likely be gone before that pick. But very handy. His athleticism is probably the knock, not really all that quick. But he can play forward, half forward, half back. He's very versatile as well. So I wouldn't be surprised. I'd be surprised if he was there at 10 and 11 for us.
Where would you envisage us playing him if we were to select him?
I'd probably see him starting probably on a wing or even a half forward line. Like, his kicking is very reliable as well. So, yeah, probably sort of the wing half forward role at this stage for Lindsay if we do take him.
And how does he compare to Murphy Reid? Because I know that in one of the videos we put out recently that we had Murphy Reid as being someone that could potentially be of interest at pick 6, which is obviously a little bit higher than 10 and 11. Are they sort of much of a similar player, or would you have one ranked vastly ahead of the other?
They're kind of similar players in the way that they play. But it's very hard to split. I think Lindsay's probably, as I said, the most well-rounded player in the draft. Murphy Reid has a few more tricks up his sleeve and could be a bit more creative with the ball. But despite that, there's really not all that much that separates them.
So it's going to be interesting to see if he lasts that long. And this is why I suppose I can really understand the argument of people wanting to keep 10 and 11, because players like this could end up there that it would be invaluable to have at the club. And this is, I suppose, where it's the whole risk versus reward, I suppose, with those draft picks. The last player we pulled up some highlights for, unfortunately, did his ACL early on in the season, Taj Houghton. So he didn't get to play the full year, but boy, he looks exciting in the games he did play this year and last year. So he's number 30 in this clip. And in this particular game, he had 32 disposals, 10 marks, 5 tackles, 5 inside 50s and 4 goals.
Yeah, Houghton is the one. I think a lot of recruiters were disappointed that he injured himself, in that he was tracking with the way that he was playing at the talent league level, shaping up as a likely top five pick. So I think while clubs are a bit disappointed, there'd also be clubs out there licking their lips and clapping their hands, because you're going to get a potential top five pick on talent for a pick outside the top 10, which is insane. And I think he'll be the type of... I think Houghton will be the type of player that we wanted Cumberland to be, as that forward who can go through the midfield, but also plays that third type. He's very solid overhead as a mark, really good kick, strong, knows how to find the ball as well. So I definitely, if there's a player that I would take the punt on, it would be Houghton.
And he's rolling through the midfield there as well. How tall is he? I haven't got his height stats. What height is he at?
I think he's 187.
Okay.
I'll just double check that.
And I suppose it's a really tricky one, because ACL is obviously a terrible injury to have. Obviously 12 months out of the game is never good. But what I find a little bit interesting, and it's not really a coincidence, but the new fitness staff that we appointed specializes in the recovery of ACL injuries and hamstring injuries. So if we were to take the punt on him, we've obviously got the right people in place to manage the injury through. And plenty of players have come back successfully from ACL injuries. So it's not, these days, it's not so much the end of the world, but it could definitely seem slide. It's just a matter of, again, we're a team in the draft that's got multiple picks to use. And this is someone we could take a punt on. And I don't see too much downside to it.
Yeah. So he's 182 centimetres, so he's not overly tall. He plays taller than what he is up forward. Similar sort of to Cumberland in that regard. As he's very good overhead and pretty strong in a contest for his height. So he plays taller than what he actually is when he's resting forward.
Pretty clean picking the ball up off the ground there as well. Well, it's going to be fascinating to see, who takes the punt on him, because whoever gets him, if he comes through with a good recovery and whatnot, they're going to have a very good player. Would there be any world where he slips as far as 20, like 18 to 20, or is someone going to take the risk on him inside the 15, do you think?
I definitely think that he'll be gone before 20. At that point, outside of the sort of top 10 to 12, clubs generally adopt the best player available. Unless it's for a drastic need. And in terms of best players in the draft, Houghton would be a top 10 player. So I wouldn't be surprised if Bo Allen is gone, that he doesn't get past West Coast. If he's still there after West Coast, I'd be very surprised.
And then teams will start clamoring to try and trade into the higher part of the draft to try and get him. Well, that was an interesting exercise to have a look at some of the potential players that could be on offer for us come draft night. But, yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what we do. Plenty of good names available, which is good. And that's why I can, like I said before, I can completely agree with people not wanting to part ways with our 10 and 11 if players like that are thereabouts. Yeah. How much of a factor do you reckon that plays on Blair's mind as well? Like, you look at the draft board, you see what's there. Like, it seriously does have to be a really good offer for us to trade those numbers away.
Absolutely. And that's why if we do trade for pick two, it probably won't be until 2 or 3 days out from the draft, where clubs sort of know where the order's going to fall, where players are going to be taken. Obviously, at that point, clubs would know who's going to be taken at pick one. And that's where Blair will be in conversation with North about that and what picks clubs can sort of start working basing on their drafts from there, and then we can sort of devise the price to pay for pick two. Otherwise, it could even happen on the actual night. That'd be something I think the AFL would push for, for the ratings and the views of just wait until you do pick one and then announce that you've traded for pick two, just for the theatrics of it. But 100%. That we focused on four players, but there's also players like Bo Allen that Uze is really, really high on. Uze rates him really well. And you've also there's a chance that Smiley could even potentially be there at 10, with the way things could potentially shape up.
That would be huge.
Yeah.
That would be a huge thing if he was there at 10.
Yeah.
Potentially. How realistic do you think that is? Like, who else would you see going above him?
Again, it just depends where clubs rank these individual players. Probably a 5% chance that he's there. It's very, very minuscule. If the Demons take Langford and St Kilda don't take Smiley, if they go for Lindsay and Murphy Reid, or even Lindsay and Travaglia, then yeah, that could potentially see Smiley at pick 10. I'm still of the opinion that Smiley's not necessarily a pressing need for us.
Yeah, okay.
If he's there at 10 and it's the difference between him and Armstrong, you'd take Armstrong all day.
Yeah, to set ourselves up for a positional need. So I do think we're going to have to target a key forward in some way, shape or form. And maybe that's what we'll have a look at next week. Maybe we'll have a look at some potential key forward options and where they might rank with our picks after 10 and 11, which is what, 18, 20. Although, yeah, you don't want to reach too far, I guess. But, yeah, it'll be very, very interesting. And a lot of people do reckon that Smiley has the highest ceiling, but, yeah,
no.
Everyone's got different views on it, I suppose. Not everyone has to align, and that's the beauty of an opinion.
If we're going on who has the highest ceiling, it's Lawler and Taru, in my opinion. They're the two players that could potentially be the best players in the draft outside of Ashcroft. But, yeah, Smiley, the question for Smiley is how he can translate to AFL level and the fact that he doesn't necessarily use his height to maximum effect. Like, he's 195 centimeters, but he's not very strong overhead or in a marking situation. That's where clubs are a little iffy. People are comparing him to Cripps, but Cripps is a very solid mark overhead. Smiley's not.
What was interesting with Smiley is that his form in the champs against players of all equal caliber pretty much didn't match the output of him in the normal Coates League games, you know, the normal season. So he still had some good numbers, but you could see there was a decline in those games, which I thought was interesting because usually it's those games where players exceed and propel themselves forward because they're playing against the best of their peers. And that's what kind of puts their name up in lights. So not to say he won't be a good player. I just thought it was interesting that for one of the players who was highly touted as number one for so long, that he was probably the only one of those players that showed a decline in numbers rather than going forward, which was interesting. And then Langford's the other interesting one. A lot of commentary about his pace. There was even someone sort of claimed that he's potentially got similar pace to an agile ruckman, that it could actually be a big downfall for him at AFL level. So that's going to be interesting to see how much of a part that plays in teams' decision-making as well. He can kick a ball, though. My God, he's got some skill.
The thing with Langford is he's very strong overhead. So even if he can't get on the lead, he's still very strong in taking front position and marking overhead. So his lack of pace isn't too much of a concern when he plays up forward. Through the midfield, he may get caught. But, yeah, as a forward, I don't necessarily think it's all that bad, especially with the way that clubs play these days where they flood back and you generally don't have space to lead into anyway. It's not all that much of a concern.
Jay-Z, I haven't heard anything about that on Channel 7. I've been a little bit busy tonight, to be fair, about Ashcroft having a chat to Richmond. Surely it's just some pleasantries. Say, g'day, how's it going? Hope you enjoy your time up in Brisbane. I can't imagine there'd be much more to it than that, to be honest.
Yeah,
I can't see a world where we bid on him. I still firmly believe that pick 20 involved a handshake agreement to not bid. I'll be gobsmacked if we bid on him.
Yeah. I think it's more the discussion of whether we bid on him at pick one or we don't bid on him at all. There's no world there where he ends up at Richmond. Like, there's no world. As EJ says, put your house on it. Even if we bid, like, Brisbane will take him in a heartbeat. They won't even have to consider it. So it doesn't really matter.
I know it's 13-14, but it's same because it's plays that we're not going to get anyway with, like, Kakao, Lombard and
Lombard.
Yeah, so they're not. It's still say it's not really impacting the actual selections. It's just the number that they fall to. So much of a muchness.
So 10 and 11 would still be 10 and 11 of the players that aren't tied to a club.
Even next year, I think Brisbane get another good pick next year as well. They are set for the next few years with academy picks. They're killing it.
Gold Coast have another one too.
Do they?
Yep. Zeke Euland, who's Bodie Euland's brother, and also a top five pick at this stage. Yeah,
they are loving life.
Yeah, potential number one right now.
David reckons we will not do a deal with North unless it's their first pick next year is involved. I firmly agree with that, David. I think that, like we said before, that even though some of the scenarios put forward are seemingly ridiculously in our favour with the pick numbers, if North want to get involved in the other rounds or the other picks in the draft, they're going to have to overpay. So either they do or they don't. And I really don't think that we care either way with the picks we've got. It's kind of on them to present us an offer that we can't refuse, and that will involve a future pick. So I completely agree with you, mate.
The conversation would have gone, North will be like, we want pick six, we'll say, and we would have responded, right, but we want next year's first rounder from you in the package.
Pretty much. Do we have any father sons coming up? There was it the Kellaways that, I don't know, I'm not sure if they're next year or the year after. There was a Kellaway plan.
2026.
Okay. Yeah. And I don't know how he's tracking either. I'm not sure if anyone's got any insight there, but I think that's the next one from memory that we've got coming through.
Yeah. Also, we do have a player in this year's draft who's linked to our NGA Academy, Zayden Lockwood, who plays for Bendigo, I believe. And, yeah, he's a swingman. He can play forward, but he's played mainly as a tall defender, as a key defender. Very skinny, very light framed, but apparently has some talent. So he could potentially even be a player that we downgrade picks for to pick him up.
Yeah, right. Okay. Interesting. I'll have to try and find some footage on him. All right. Well, that is a wrap for tonight. I hope everyone enjoyed that. I hope you all enjoyed the footage being able to be shown and the slides with the North Melbourne pick scenario, something a little bit different, but I thought it was important to try and get some visual up on it as well, because it's easy to follow and get a gauge on. So Grok, thank you, mate, for jumping on tonight. Make sure you keep checking out the YouTube channel. There's plenty of videos going up. Like I said, there's one about who will take it one, who will take it six. My thoughts on Armstrong potentially getting to 10. It's doable. It's doable. So make sure you get around all those videos as well. And yeah, maybe next week we'll take a look at some of the key forwards in the draft that still might be available towards our later picks. Yeah, I'm sure there'll be a few other Richmond things that pop up along the way. But thanks for tuning in, everybody. Make sure you get around us on all the socials, and we'll see you all on Monday coming. It's just like Christmas time. It's getting closer, folks. So until Monday night, go Tigers.
Go Tigers.